Hierdie inset word aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.
Welkom by die ABO-program Krag van die Bybel. Ons luister vandag soos gewoonlik is weer na die Bible Project potgooi. Vandag gaan dit oor True and False Prophets. Die woorde van Jesus wat ons lees in Matteus 7 van vers 13, eintlik die hele gedeelte is van vers 13 af. En ons lees van vers 13 tot vers 23. Dit is die gedeelte waaroor dit gaan. En ons sal dit ook kan saam lees. Maar kom ons luister eers dat die true and false prophets van Bible Projects, en dan gesels ons, dan mediteer ons verder daaroor, as ons klaar ook daarna geluister het. Hierdie program, soos jy weet, gaan oor hoe lees ek die Bybel? Hoe ervaar ek die krag van die lewende woord van God? En daar is so baie gepraat hieroor vandag, deur baie mense, die een verstaan die Bybel so, die ander verstaan dit so, maar Bible Projects help ons om te verstaan, maar ons moet hom lees soos wat die Here dit vir ons gegee het, deur mense geskryf vir spesifieke mense. En wanneer ons dit verstaan, wat sê die woord hier vir mense in hulle eie situasie, dan kan ons dit verstaan en dan pas die gees dit in ons eie harte toe, hoe ek dit vandag kan toepas en lewe, so dat dit 'n krag is in my lewe. Abbo bied hierdie program aan, en Abbo lei mense op om bybelgebaseerde berading te doen. So jy kan na Abbo se webwerf gaan, www.abbo.org Abbo, dis abbo.org.za, of jy kan berietjie skakel by 084-501-1102. Jy kan ook inbel na Kaapse Kansel 021-180-5744 en met 'n berader praat van jou keuse binne vertroulikheid, en net deel wat swaar op jou hart lê nou op hierdie oomblik. Ons gaan luister nou eers na hierdie potgooi van Bible Projects. Ek is Marius Skalekamp en ek sien uit daarna om hierdie volgende 2 uur saam met jou deur te gaan en te luister na die potgooie en te gesels, juist oor hierdie gedeelte, wat so belangrik is, wat die Here praat oor valse en ware profete. En hy praat een boom, een doringboom wat die vye kan dra nie, en andersom ook. En hy praat van die valse profete wat in skaapsklere na ons toe kom, met ander woorde lyk goed, maar eintlik is hulle wolwe. En dan eindig hy hierdie gedeelte, maar selfs as jy wonderwerke gedoen het, mense gezond gemaakt het, geeste uitgedryf het, dan is het moontlik dat jy nie van my af is nie. Wat bedoel die Here daarby? Kom ons luister hierna en ons neem die volgende tyd om werklik net te mediteer en te dink oor die woord van die Here. John en Tim gaan nou gesels in die volgende potgooi, want ons is nou besig om te kyk na die bergpredikasie Matteus 7 vers 13 tot 23, waar die Here besig is om hierdie ongelooflike preek van hom, wat so baie mense ken, om dit af te sluit. en hy doen dit in 3 dele. Hy beskryf eers die nou poort en hoe moeilik is dit om in te gaan, maar het maak die weg na die lewe oop. En die wye poort, hoe maklik om dit te navigeer, maar dit lei tot ondergang. En dis hierdie spanning tussen hierdie keuses wat ons moet maak tussen die 2 poorte en die 2 paaie, wat so duidelik uitkom in hierdie woorde van Jesus. En Tim en John gaan juist daaroor ook dan gesels. Hoe weet ons of iemand ons op die pad na die lewe lei? En na wie se stem ons kan luister? Jesus gebruik die beelde van wolwe en skaapsklere en van bome wat vrugte dra. Hy beklemtoon dat ons wysheid nodig het om die te herken wat werklik van hom afkom. Tim en John stoei met hierdie in hierdie potgooi met hierdie uitdaging om God se woord te kan onderskei en die werklike bestemming van die pad wat ons loop in ons lewe te verstaan, ongeag dit waarop ons beroep. Kom ons luister met vreugde in ons harte en om regtig die woord te hoor en te verstaan na hierdie gesprek tussen Tim en John. Bly ingeskakel.
This is Bible Project Podcast, and this year we've been reading through the Sermon on the Mount. I'm John Collins, and with me is co-host Michelle Jones. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, John. The Sermon on the Mount is a manifesto about how to live in the way of Jesus. We are in the conclusion of the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus calls us to take everything to heart and to make the choice that leads to life. Now, there are 3 final images that Jesus gives us that all represent this choice. The first, which we looked at last week, is about 2 types of roads you can take: the broad road that leads to death or the narrow path that leads to life.
The 3rd image, which we'll look at next week, is pretty similar. There are 2 types of houses you can build: a house on the sand that's going to wash away in the flood, or a house on the rock that will stand.
But today is the teaching right in the middle of those 2 teachings. It isn't about which path you take or about which house you build. It's about the people who will try to get you off the path or out of the house. This teaching is about wolves in sheep's clothing, bad apples, false teachers.
So pay attention to who you listen to, because not everybody who says they represent Jesus represents Jesus. As we're going to see, this is a problem with deep roots in the story of Israel.
We'll pick up today's conversation with a reading of this teaching found in Matthew 7, 15 to 23.
Thanks for joining us.
Here we go.
Watch out for illegitimate prophets who come to you in the clothing of sheep, but inside they are wolves who snatch. By their fruits you will recognize them. Do people gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Similarly, every good tree produces good fruit, but the diseased tree produces bad fruit. A good tree is not able to produce bad fruit, and a diseased can't produce good fruit. Every tree that doesn't produce good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. So then, by their fruit, you will recognize them. Not everyone who says to me, Master, Master, will enter into the kingdom of the skies, but rather the one who does the desire of my Father in the skies. Many will say to me on that day, Master, Master, didn't we prophesy in your name, and cast out demons in your name, and do many mighty acts in your name? And then I will confess to them, I have never known you. Go away from me, you who act as if there is no Torah. It's great reading your translation.
Good. I'm glad it's a good experience for you. Yeah. It's helpful for me.
There's a lot there.
It's a long teaching. I just want to draw attention. He began by saying, watch out for certain prophets.
Yeah.
They look one way, but inside they're another.
Okay.
Then he moves on to the saying about the trees.
Yes.
Then he comes back to this little scene where he's envisioning a like being in a courtroom. Not everyone who says to me, Master, Master, because a lot of people on that day, you're like, oh, on a day of reckoning, apparently, lots of people are going to say, didn't we prophesy in your name?
Prophets. Back to the prophets.
Back to the prophets. And also, what do the prophets do? Well, the prophets speak for another, but also cast out demons and do mighty acts. These are things that Jesus was doing, speaking for God,
okay,
casting out demons, doing signs and wonders.
Yeah.
So Jesus is saying there's going to be other people.
Okay.
And actually, we're going to learn this in chapter 10. Jesus is going to send out the 12 to go announce the kingdom of God, cast out demons, and do signs and wonders.
Oh, yeah.
So Jesus commissions representatives on his behalf.
To do the things that he does.
Yep, that's right. But watch out, because not everybody who I send out or who thinks they're sent out by me is a legitimate representative of me. And there will be people who say they represent me, but rather they don't do the desire of my Father. And we're not in covenant relationship. And so that's the last part. So you begin with prophets, wolves and sheep, trees in the middle, and then back to the prophets and representatives who don't know me.
So the prophets at the beginning, this is a classic image, the wolf in sheep's clothing.
Wolf. Yeah, totally. Yeah. I bet somebody's done a history of that motif just in world literature. A wolf dressing up.
Yeah. And I got to imagine Jesus didn't invent this.
No, I bet.
At this point in human history.
No, I bet it was a common image.
Yeah.
It's kind of classic, though.
Well, it's so classic because if you think about one of the most ancient kind of settings is having a bunch of sheep that you have to take care of. And so one day, some shepherd kind of thinking about a sneaky wolf, so sneaky.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he takes the outer wool of a sheep.
Yep, that's classic. Yeah, it's easy to think of how a story like that would be generated by a bunch of shepherds who actually have to deal with real wolves. So the question that the sheep and the wolf situation places, unstated.
Yeah, how can you know the difference?
How do you know the difference?
Yeah.
Well, there's something inside, right? They have the clothing of sheep, but inside they're wolves.
Okay.
So they look and act like legitimate representatives for God or Jesus, but inside. So much of the Sermon on the Mount has been about external behavior and inner motive.
I was thinking that, like, that whole center section of the center is doing the right thing for the wrong reason.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So you can be praying out on the streets,
yeah,
but you're there just to get praise.
Yeah.
So you're actually not connecting to God.
Yeah.
And God is not in a relationship with that person. They're in it for the public affirmation. That's the reward they want.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. And the drumbeat through that section about generosity to the poor, prayer, and fasting was there are moments and times where it's probably most wise to do those things in secret or in a way that nobody else can know so that your heavenly Father, who sees what's done in secret, will give you a reward. So that contrast of hidden versus public, in your inner motivation and your outer behavior. So that's already on the mind.
Yeah.
And so the idea that there could be people who represent Jesus, and externally they're doing the Jesus stuff, but internally their motives and their are all screwed up and their souls are disintegrated and inconsistent, and that's what he's addressing. So that creates that question, how can you tell? And that's what the tree imagery goes on to give you some handles there.
Yeah. With a tree, it's really obvious. If it's producing fruit, then it's good. It's a good tree.
Right. So it feels like, that's a, as a first response, by your fruits, you'll know. Notice the Eden imagery here. A tree of good and bad versus thorns. Ooh, and figs are in the Eden story. Adam and Eve use fig, the leaves of a fig tree to cover themselves.
And where do the thorns come in? Is that the curse?
Outside of Eden.
Yeah.
It's the land of thorns and thistles.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So Eden imagery here. But what's wonderful is the way Jesus presents, surely he's got a twinkle in his eye because He makes it seem so straightforward.
Yeah, so straightforward.
But the whole thing about the tree of knowing good and bad, it was in a way straightforward, but also kind of wasn't. Because it's a beautiful, good-looking tree, like all the others.
Yeah, and it was producing fruit that looked good.
Yes, but it was didn't lead to life. So that's interesting.
Okay.
And then also, what he just said is, the problem is it looks like a sheep. So you might think, okay, so if the tree is producing good fruit, but what if the good fruit comes from a bad tree? And he says, well, bad trees can't really produce good fruit. But what's he going to go on to say in the third part is a whole bunch of people who
are doing the good works.
Doing the works of Jesus.
Yeah, the good fruit.
And it's evident to nobody that they're illegitimate representatives.
So, yeah, I felt that when we read it.
Did you?
The contradiction there. It's going to be easy to know. Mm-hmm. A bad tree can't produce good fruit.
Except when it does.
Except you're going to run into that a lot.
Except when it seems to. I mean, maybe it's saying a bad tree can't produce good fruit. As a general rule, that's true. Certainly on a botanical level. You know, fig trees don't produce thistles. But the problem is there are some wolves that can really, really look like sheep. But in reality, they're wolves. So what I love about this is that you read it at first and you're like, okay, I think I got it. Simple. And the three-part arrangement of this kind of forces you to look at the problem from multiple angles.
Now, we've got this entire teaching in our head and we can feel the tension between the parts. There will be wolves among us that look like sheep. Watch out because you won't be able to tell the difference. Then the second part. Actually, you can tell the difference when you look at the fruit of their life. And then the third part. Well, actually, there will be people who are doing miraculous things in my name, and it might look good, but in reality, they aren't part of God's kingdom, and I don't know them. So holding these three teachings in tension, we continue to explore the central question. How do we know who's speaking for God and who isn't? How do we know who's aligning us with a good path and who's taking us away from it? We'll pick up again, looking at how this question is not just interesting, it is a central motivating question for the story of the entire Bible.
Remember, the Hebrew Bible is the Minority Report. It's a way of telling Israel's family story from a minority group's point of view within Israel.
These are the prophets.
They are the prophets.
The prophets.
Moses and the prophets.
Yeah.
They represent the loyal to Yahweh, faithful to the covenant.
They didn't have the book deals.
And they preserved a way of telling Israel's story that is what we have in the Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
But there were other ways of telling Israel's story and other people who totally did not agree. Israelites, namely kings and priests, powerful people in ancient Israel who disagreed.
And they had their prophets.
So in other words, this internal tension of who truly speaks for God is baked in to the story of Israel long before Jesus.
Yeah.
So when we have in our own generation, these kind of sectarian or inner critiques of like, you don't speak for God, our group does.
Yeah.
That's a dynamic that's been inherent within the Christian, and before that, the story of Israel from its roots. And I think it's because Israel's story began with a sense of identity of being called out from among the many to carry on something that God has given to us on behalf of everybody else. And so just that sets up a tension right there.
What you're saying is the impulse to label someone as a false prophet. While it can become a really dangerous and kind of maybe unfruitful thing, I've seen it often that
way.
Yeah,
yep, that's right.
At the same time, that impulse comes from really the story of the Bible.
Yeah.
That it was a Minority Report of people saying, hey, look, don't trust the way that these people are telling you why Israel exists or what's the way of God. Like, they've got it wrong, and it's dangerous, and it's leading to death.
Yeah.
And so In another sense, we should actually kind of be comfortable with.
Yeah, no, it comes with the territory. Inheriting the movement of Jesus and carrying it forward faithfully involves, by nature, some way of self-critique.
Mm.
But I guess the question is, self-critique can lead to improvement.
Mm.
And like, oh, okay, let's be more faithful. And, okay, oh, let me hear what you have to say. Oh, you think I'm really wrong. I want to hear you so that I can, you know, recognize some blind spots or errors in my thinking. And then other times it just becomes tribalism. But the thing is when you're being critiqued, it's easy to call it tribalism on the other person's part. And usually when you're critiquing, it's because you have a conviction that somebody really is going the wrong way. And so it's hard. Usually people are thinking they're doing the right thing, which is what leads to these tensions in the first place.
Well, it's the way you critique too. So you painted a picture of a critique that was inviting. Hey, I am seeing a hole in the way you're thinking. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
Versus you're a wolf.
Yeah, totally.
Everyone needs to see that you're a wolf,
yeah,
and we need to get you out of here.
That's right, because you're going to destroy people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You don't bring the wolf in and say, let's talk.
Yeah, that's right.
And let's critique.
Yeah.
You get the wolf out.
That's right. So maybe this is where it's important to acknowledge the ancient context of Jesus's way of facing this in his moment.
Okay.
Because as we're going to see, we talked about this in the last conversation, he's at a moment when he's saying Israel is going to get destroyed by the Roman Empire. He predicts it later in Matthew. Well, Israel wasn't destroyed, but Jerusalem was, and the temple was. And what he's saying here is there are people that are going to represent me going on, but twist what I'm saying and use it to leverage whatever they're going to do. And it's going to lead to the Roman destruction of Jerusalem. And those people don't represent me. And I think the emotional intensity for Jesus was matching the emotional intensity of the time when he lived, you know?
Mm.
That's the context of what he's saying. But what we're trying to do then is say, okay, how do we adopt this mentality?
Right.
That it's good to be aware of if somebody is unfaithfully or maybe just less faithfully representing Jesus. So how does one tell? So let's start with a whole idea of false prophets. So this is the focus of two prophets in the Hebrew Bible, especially Jeremiah and Ezekiel. And both Jeremiah and Ezekiel have sections in their books where it's whole poems and essays devoted to accusing and delegitimizing other prophets who disagree with Jeremiah and Ezekiel. And it's important to remember, Jeremiah and Ezekiel were a minority. The kings and the priests didn't listen to these two. And they were persecuted and rejected by most of their contemporaries. But what they saw coming was the destruction of Israel at the hands of Babylon. That's what happened. And nobody else saw it the way they did until after it happened.
Okay.
So here's a classic passage from Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 16, where Jeremiah says, "This is what Yahweh of hosts says. Don't listen to the words of the prophets who are prophesying to you. They're leading you into futility. They speak of vision from their own imagination, not from the mouth of Yahweh." This is interesting. He says, "They keep saying to people who despise me," this is Yahweh talking, mm-hmm, so people who are dishonoring the covenant,
mm-hmm,
so not living by the wisdom of the covenant commands of the Torah, and the prophets keep saying to those people, "This is what Yahweh says. You're going to have shalom." Mm. There's shalom coming for you. And for people who are walking in the stubbornness of their heart, the prophets say, "Oh, nothing bad is going to come upon you." But then Jeremiah says this, "You tell me, prophets, who of you has stood in the counsel of the Lord?" This is the same word that's used in the Psalms about the divine counsel.
Mm-hmm.
So we're imagining that Yahweh has a throne room.
Mm-hmm. Like a heavenly, divine throne room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And from there, messengers are sent out that God will send to represent his decrees and choices. And so that divine counsel is described in different poems, Psalm 82, 1 Kings 22, a prophet who's rejected by the kings of Israel named Micaiah says, hey, I had a vision about the divine council. And in fact, Yahweh gave me a peek into it so that he could tell me to tell you something. Mm. In other words, what Jeremiah is saying here is, I'm privy to the counsel of Yahweh. And what's interesting is in the book of Jeremiah, he's not happy about it. It ruins his life to stand in the counsel of Yahweh. And he keeps wishing that it didn't happen to him. He's saying, it's ruined my life.
It's the red pill.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, I wish I could have just not known.
Yeah, and the famous lines from Jeremiah, it's like, and because of it, I carry the word of Yahweh in my heart, but I don't want to say it to anybody because it ruins my life and people hate me and hurt me.
Yeah.
But if I don't say it, it burns in my heart like a fire that consumes me. Mm. So I have to say it, but it ruins everything for me. It's really fascinating dynamic of the book of Jeremiah. So in other words, there's a heavenly council and there's angelic representatives, but then there's also these humans, participants who get a window. And that's how you know. But that just raises another problem because, well, anybody can say that I stood in the council of Yahweh.
Right.
Like, how do you know?
Yeah.
You know, the golden tablets were shown to me by the angel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So how do you know? Jeremiah doesn't really answer that question. He just raises it. Also, just to note, multiple times in Ezekiel, who was a contemporary of Jeremiah, Jeremiah lived in Jerusalem in the shadow of Babylon. Ezekiel lived and wrote his book in a refugee camp in Babylon as one of the exiles. And what's interesting, he describes the false prophets who said, everything's going to be fine. Babylon's not going to do anything. God would never let that happen. He says, woe, this is chapter 13, verse 3, woe to the foolish prophets who follow their own ruach, their own spirit, but have seen nothing. They genuinely think they represent me, but they are actually, all they hear and are animated by is their own ruach. Interesting.
Yeah.
He says they're like foxes among ruins.
That's not an intuitive image for me.
Let's see. Well, think of ruins. Have you ever been among some ruins?
Yeah. Okay.
And have you ever seen a fox among those ruins? I haven't.
No, but I've seen foxes.
Yeah.
And I've been in ruins. So I can merge those two experiences together.
Yeah, totally.
I would think, oh, what a cute little fox hanging out in these ruins. He made a little fort in the ruins. What a cute little fox.
So foxes are what? They're predators to small rodents.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, they're just scavengers.
Mm.
Right? They survive off of the misfortune of the situation. Because if you're among ruins, a tragedy has happened.
Mm.
But, right? So if a city's blown down by a storm.
So they're there to get like a chunk of flesh.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. So ruins is, there's been destruction.
Okay.
All these.
There's some dead bodies.
People, carcasses,
around.
Pets, food now left they behind.
Would, if you had said hyena amongst the ruins,
oh,
I would have gotten it.
Yeah, got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a cultural location.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't have hyenas.
Yeah. So I think Ezekiel's image is like there's ruin and destruction everywhere.
Yeah.
And there's these prophets who are saying, everything's fine. Everything's going to be fine. But they're like foxes. So what's interesting is, you know, Jesus uses another image of the wolf, which is much more predatory, whereas the fox is kind of more the scavenger.
Mm, more opportunistic.
Yeah, there you go. But that's the image here. So the only criteria given in the Hebrew Bible for discerning legitimate and illegitimate prophets, it's given in two chapters in Deuteronomy.
Okay.
Where this problem got anticipated. And one of them in Deuteronomy chapter 13 makes it fairly clear that says, well, if a prophet or a dreamer comes among you and performs a sign or wonder, and it comes true, but then they say, you know, I heard also from Yahweh, but I also heard from like Dagon, the god of the Philistines down at the coast, and I think we should go pay tribute to Dagon and offer some sacrifices in his temple. That's my imagination. What it says in Deuteronomy is, let us go after other gods and let us serve them. Then Moses says, don't listen to the words of that prophet, even though they may have done a sign or wonder.
Okay.
Don't listen to them if they're not for Yahweh alone.
Okay. That's simple.
Yeah.
Simple test.
Simple test. So that's one. Another is in Deuteronomy 18, where Moses anticipates that, hey, God's going to raise up more prophets like me from among you. And chapter 18, verse 21, you know, you might say in your heart, Moses says, how will we know if this prophet is not speaking the word of the Lord? And what Moses says here is, well, if a prophet speaks in the name of Yahweh, and if the thing that they said doesn't come about or come true, then Yahweh didn't speak through them. That prophet, he said, spoke presumptuously. He thought Yahweh spoke to him, but he didn't. And then he just says, don't be afraid of him. Just don't listen to that guy. Mm. So this is more about if there's an announcement of something coming, and then that doesn't happen, then like, is, you know, it's the pizza that he had last night talking. He gave him a bad dream, and just don't listen to that guy. So in the Hebrew Bible, those are the two criteria. Is he for Yahweh alone? Mm. And if they predicted something, did it happen or not? Mm. So that's some help, but it sure leaves a lot of other possible
loopholes. Because like, at what point do you call it? You're like, all right, he said said it was going to rain, and it hasn't rained yet.
Yeah.
Well, but did he say it was going to rain today, or is it going to be this week?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
How long do we wait? Ooh,
this is actually what people use as an accusation against Jeremiah.
Okay.
As they say, you keep saying God's going to give us over into the hands of Babylon.
Yeah, we're fine.
And so far, we're fine. Mm. Babylon showed up a few years ago and took a few people captive.
Yeah, but we held them off.
We held them off, and Ezekiel's over there, and I think he's going to be okay, and I think it's over.
Okay.
Storm's blown over. We're going to be fine now.
Mm.
And Jeremiah kept saying, no, no, the storm's coming. A flood's coming. So I think my kind of main point is this, is there is an awareness of this problem.
Yeah.
Who speaks for God, that's baked in to the very origin and calling of Israel as one from out from among the many.
Yeah.
Claiming that the God of the universe has spoken to us and is doing something through us for the whole world.
It's a bold thing
to say. It's a bold thing to say.
Yeah.
And then internal to Israel, there breaks off into splinter groups of saying, well, okay, but what God is doing within Israel for the whole world is happening within our group within Israel and not in yours. And you can just see it's part of the dynamic tension. It's built in. So there's awareness of the problem. There's some criteria, but it doesn't seem like the Hebrew Bible was developed as a handbook to help navigate this challenge.
Mm.
Unless you're talking about wisdom, that the stories and the poetry of the Minority Report, that is the Hebrew Bible, is meant to cultivate a deep inner wisdom and a generosity of spirit for how you go about discerning the voice of God through people. And when Jesus starts talking about recognizing the truth by the fruit of a tree, there's a wisdom there that Jesus is drawing on that does feel intuitive. It's not a slam dunk or a silver bullet, but it is true that, like, if you look at the trajectory of someone's life choices, how they act over a long period of time will tell the most reliable truth, not always, but often, about their character. And if it's good fruit, it's likely someone you can trust. That doesn't solve everything, but it is one part of discerning the compass.
Maybe I'm not asking you to go and worship another god, but I'm turning God into an image of something else. And so when I'm saying, let's go worship Yahweh, we're no longer really worshiping Yahweh.
Yeah, what if the Yahweh that I say I'm representing isn't really faithful to the actual Yahweh?
Mm.
Right?
Right.
Yeah, I'm for Yahweh. And Yahweh is down for XYZ.
Yeah. I could say I'm following Yahweh. Yeah. We could say we're worshiping Yahweh.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, we're chasing after money or
that's right.
sex or power or something else.
And using Yahweh's name.
And using Yahweh's name.
As it means to that end.
And so then we get to this teaching of Jesus. And he has a very simple, intuitive test. Is the fruit good or bad? And that's a good true north.
Okay, so the fruit's in the middle. Let's turn to this last thing.
We started with false prophets who are wolves in sheep's clothing. Then in the middle is the teaching of good fruit versus bad fruit.
Then Jesus comes back to false prophets and he says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter into the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and in your name drive out demons and in your name perform many miracles?' Then I will say to them plainly, 'I never knew you. Away from me, you who live as if there is no Torah.'"
This is a fascinating scene. The saying shows a self-awareness that Jesus has, that there's going to be a day when he's going to be in this central position to announce about certain people, to confess, which is a courtroom scene.
Yeah, who are the sheep?
Yeah, who are the sheep? Who are the wolves? Who are the people I know? Who are the people I don't know? But it presumes that Jesus thought of himself that he's going to play a role in a final sorting out. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. He doesn't say it explicitly, but it assumes that.
Yeah.
And notice this saying of the many will say to me, it's arranged in three parts. The first part and the last part actually do give you another criteria. He says in the first part, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' or 'Master, Master,' will enter the kingdom of the skies. It's the one who does the desire of my Father."
Okay.
I mean, this was a main theme of the main body of the sermon.
Yeah.
Which is about the prayer in the middle. May your desire, O God, be done. Your will be done. The Jesus' ethical teachings are about giving us wisdom so that our desires and actions begin to align with the Father's desires and actions. So does this person represent and act according to the desire of my Father? And then in the last line, he says, you know, "I'll say to them, I've never known you. You act as if there's no Torah." So it's my kind of literal translation. What most of our English translations, I think, says, "Go away from me, you doers of lawlessness."
Mm.
You who practice lawlessness.
Yeah.
So it's the phrase, you who produce or act, to work and make something. And what you make is anomia. So nomia is the word law, and a is the negative. So anti-law.
You produce the anti-law.
What you produce is against the law.
Mm.
But he's a Jewish teacher.
Yeah.
Law in law Jesus' teachings not, means the covenant commands of the Torah. So what you produce is anti-Torah.
Anti-Torah.
You act and live as if the Torah doesn't exist, or what you do is contrary to the Torah.
Which is a way to get back to the good fruit, in a way.
That's right, yeah. To do the desire of God is to live in alignment with the wisdom of the Torah. And then what Jesus said earlier in the body of the sermon was, I'm here to call Israel to a greater righteousness that fulfills the Torah. So, in a way, you know someone is producing good fruit and does the desire of the Father if they live according to the teachings of Jesus.
Act as if there is no Torah. And we just finished Jesus saying the golden rule fulfills the Torah.
Yeah. This is the Torah and prophets.
This is the Torah and prophets.
Yeah, that's right.
To love your neighbor as yourself.
Whatever you desire your neighbor does to you, desire, do that to your neighbor.
Do that to your neighbor. Then we looked at other examples of people summarizing the law of the prophets.
Mm-hmm.
So Micah, walk humbly, love
do
mercy,
justice. Yep.
What were some of the other ones?
Yeah, Habakkuk 2:4, the righteous will live by faith.
Live by faith.
Yep. Amos, seek me and live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's different ways to get at what is the fruit, what is the way, what is the type of person who lives by the Torah? How will you notice that? Mm-hmm. They love their neighbor like themselves. Their desires for others, they walk with humility and justice, and they have life. And so you can call that fruit. And that seems like different type of fruit than saying, did they cast out a demon? Did they make a prophecy?
Did they heal someone?
Did they heal someone?
Yeah.
Because there's going to be people who could come and boldly do some miraculous thing.
Yeah.
proclaim some miraculous thing, draw the crowd, rally, like that is going to happen.
In fact, once again, Jesus brings this up again later in the Gospel of Matthew, and we reviewed this at the end of the last conversation. When Jesus predicted the downfall of Jerusalem at the hands of Rome, in that saying, in Matthew chapter 24, he repeats this thing from the Sermon on the Mount. He says, at that time, many will fall away, many will betray each other, many false prophets will rise up and lead many. Or, verse 5, many will come in my name, saying, I am the Messiah, I represent God's will, heavenly will on earth now, and will mislead many. So, once again, we should first honor the context that he's speaking within.
Right, yeah.
That there is a way for Israel that is faithful to the law and the prophets, fulfills the law and the prophets, and that will lead us away from a confrontation with Rome. And then there is a way that people will say represents me or Yahweh, and it will lead to ruin. And that's part of the fruit, right? Does the fruit lead to violent revolution?
Mm.
It's not me. Does it lead to forgiving one's neighbor and not participating in violent revolt against Rome? Then that's me. I appreciate, though, this distinction that you're making. There's sort of like the really public leadership, glam and glitter stuff that impresses people. And that is a fruit. But what I'm after is people who live according to the desire of my Father.
Yeah.
And my Father's desire is to cast out demons and to heal people.
You could do the right thing for the wrong reason, and that can lead to destruction.
Exactly. So I said this earlier, and I think I want to focus on it, at least because it's helpful for me, is it's fascinating to me that this theme runs right throughout the biblical story. It's a tension built in to the Jewish and Christian story, because this is a story told from a people who have been selected out from among the many on behalf of the many.
Mm-hmm.
And so that minority perspective is always going to generate this kind of tension about, well, who truly represents the minority perspective for God? And the fingers pointing back and forth. And the Bible by itself doesn't seem to have been designed as a handbook to give us the bullet point criteria for what to do in every situation when that when that's at stake or when that's a thing under debate. But it does tell us this is a perpetual challenge that every generation is likely going to have to navigate. And lo and behold, every generation of the Jesus movement has had to deal with this challenge.
But let's recenter this. Mm-hmm. This is in a section of Jesus saying there's a stark choice.
Yes, I'm placing a choice.
Placing a choice.
Yep.
The first teaching was a lot simpler, but rich in meditative wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
There's a path that leads to life, but it's narrow and constricting.
Yeah.
And there's a path that leads to death. It's broad. Many are on it. In this section, it's still talking about that choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's about make sure you're on the path of life. And there's going to be people who want to take you off of that path.
Mm-hmm.
And when someone tries to take you off that path, it's going to be some confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Are they taking me off the path or are they leading me back onto the
path? Onto the path, yeah. Yeah.
How do I know?
Mm-hmm.
Because they might take me onto the broad path and say, we're on the narrow path, but now we're like marching into death. And I don't, that's not what I want. And so Jesus is very sternly saying, these people are dangerous.
Mm. Yeah. One key factor is watch the pattern of their lives.
Watch the pattern of their lives.
And the fruit, the things that they set in motion, what do they lead to?
Yeah. And it's not as simple as, did they do a miracle? Or did make a prophecy? It's what is the long pattern?
Yeah.
Is it a life of justice and mercy and humility and love of the neighbor and peace? Are they creating peace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And does it conform to the desire of my Father in the skies that aligns with the wisdom of the Torah as expressed through the teachings of Jesus in this sermon, in this collection of teachings? And you can press all of them until they break, all those categories. But also, like, it's not nothing. It's like, that is...
It's not nothing. You could press it till it breaks, and at that point, you just have to say, Lord, have mercy, and come and be the final one to tell us.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, that scene that we end in, be the one that says who was actually in your name or not.
Yep.
Let's wait for that. But in the meantime, be careful not to slide off of the narrow path because of some sneaky guy.
Sneaky guy. And if you feel like you need to draw attention to the sneaky guy, I guess also whatever you desire your neighbor would do to you, do also to them.
Yeah, I mean, the whole, all the teaching about judging is just ringing in my ears.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Because we're judging here.
That's right. That's
and Jesus is like, well, don't judge.
Yeah.
But here he's like, okay.
Yeah.
But there's...
That's right.
Judge people by the fruit, because it's really important if someone's going to take you off the path.
Yep.
So you got to hold those two teachings in tension.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. This is a good example of the Bible as wisdom literature. It gives you guidance, but doesn't tell you exactly what to do in every possible scenario. It requires you to take up these pointers to wisdom and then trust God on your own journey and your community's journey to find the right way forward.
Seems like one of the pieces of guidance embedded in here is the permission to be just constantly suspicious. Things might seem kind of rosy. But let's be suspicious and let's peek underneath and let's examine.
And it's very easy to notice all of that for other people.
Yeah.
So maybe there's also an invitation that I need to be aware of this within myself and my own community.
Yeah.
And that that's also a takeaway.
Yeah.
A perpetual suspicion of self that maybe not debilitating.
Right.
But that just that your self-examination.
Yeah.
And that you invite those processes of self-examination in yourself and in your community, that that's important.
Yeah.
To make sure you're not morphing into a wolf or a thorn bush without realizing it.
Yeah.
Because I guess that can happen too. So with that, we don't resolve, but I feel like we've honored both the main point, the heartbeat of what Jesus is saying, and also the complexity that comes with it. And so now we shift to the third and final warning of choice that Jesus sets in front of Israel. And it's also the third and final part of the conclusion to the Sermon on the Mount. And it's a tale of two houses.
That's it for today's episode.
Next week, we look at the third and final image that Jesus gives us about the choice. Build your house on the sand or build your house on the rock.
But what if there's a measure that is more true than my own desires and imagination? What if there's a way of living that's actually more along the grain of the universe that leads to the ultimate good life that is not something that would occur to me?
Bible Project is a nonprofit, and we exist to help people experience the Bible as a unified story that leads to Jesus.
Everything that we make is free because of the generous support of thousands of people just like you.
Thank you for being a part of this with us.
Hi, this is Chris Lockamy, and I'm from Baltimore, Maryland.
Hi, this is Candace, and I'm from Central Indiana. I first heard about Bible Project when I started listening to the podcast to paint my daughter's room where she had scribbled on the walls.
I first heard about Bible Project from a friend who recommended the podcast and specifically the Character of God series. My favorite thing about Bible Project is the podcast. I love listening to Tim and John and others dig deep into the Word.
My favorite thing about Bible Project is everything. Thanks for all you do. We believe the Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus.
We are a crowdfunded project by people like me. Find free videos, articles, podcasts, classes, and more
on the Bible Project app and at BibleProject.com.
Hi, this is Tyler, here to read the credits. John Collins is the creative producer for today's show. Production of today's episode is by producer Lindsay Ponder, managing producer Cooper Peltz, producer Colin Wilson. Stephanie Tam is our consultant and editor. Tyler Bailey is our supervising engineer. Frank Garza and Aaron Olson edited today's episode. Aaron Olson also provided the sound design and mix for today's episode. Nina Simone does our show notes, and Hannah Wu provides the annotations for our app. Original Sermon on the Mount music by Richie Cohen, and the Bible Project theme song is by Tense. Tim Mackey is our lead scholar, and your hosts, John Collins and Michelle Jones.
Welkom terug by die program Krag van die Bybel. En ons het nou net so geluister na Tim en John en hoe hulle hierdie belangrike beelde wat Jesus gebruik in Matteus 7, hoe hulle dit vir ons verduidelik en self stoei eintlik daarmee. Want dit is die punt. Ons lees baie keer die Bybel en dit klink so mooi en reg en dink ons verstaan dit. In steede van om net te stop en rustig te word, en te sê, maar, wat sê die Here nou vir my hier? Wat hoor ek? Wat sê hy oor hom, oor ander, oor my, oor hierdie wêreld? En dan, hoe kan ek dit toepas in my eie lewe? So dit vat tyd, en die is baie gepraat, ja, dit is so, nog en ek ook nou weer praat, maar alles dit, is om ons net te begelei, nie om maklike antwoorde te gee nie, maar om ons te begelei om werklik die woorde van die Here te verstaan, sy woord, en dat dit werklik 'n krag word. Paulus skryf dit so baie keer, in die begin van sy briewe, en in die Korintiërs skryf hy dit, later in die brief, en in Thessalonicense skryf hy dit, dat die woord 'n krag geword het in julle, en duidelik geword het vir almal om te sien. En dit is waaroor dit ook hier gaan. En Jesus gebruik dan hierdie beelde, wanneer ons dan hierna luister in Matteus 7, dan gebruik hy hierdie woorde die poort en die pad as beelde wat mekaar aanvul. En kom ons lees dit hierdie woorde van Jesus in Matteus 7 van vers 13. Gaan deur die nou poort, want breed is die pad en wyd die poort wat aan die verderf lei. Daar is baie wat daardeur binne gaan. Maar hoe nou is die poort en hoe smal die pad wat aan die lewe lei. Daar is min wat dit vind. Wees op julle hoede vir die valse profete wat in skaapskleer na julle kom, maar in hulle binneste wolwe is wat verskeur. Aan hulle vrugte sal julle hulle uitken. Pluk 'n mes miskien druiwe van doringstruike of vye van dissels. Net so dra elke goeie boom goeie vrugte, maar 'n slegte boom dra slegte vrugte. 'n Goeie boom kan nie slegte vrugte dra nie, en 'n slegte boom kan nie goeie vrugte dra nie. Elke boom wat nie goeie vrugte dra nie, word uitgekap en in die vuur gegooi. Aan hulle vrugte sal julle hulle dus uitken. Nie elkeen wat vir my sê, Here, Here, sal ingaan in die koninkryk van die hemele nie, maar net diegene wat die wil doen van my Vader in die hemele. Baie sal op daardie dag vir my sê, Here, Here, het ons nie in U naam geprofeteer en U naam demone uitgedryf en in U naam baie kragtige dade verrig nie? Dan sal ek openlik vir hulle sê, ek het julle nooit geken nie. Gaan weg van my, julle wat wetteloosheid bedryf. Nou, ons het dit baie keer in die verlede al beklemtoon, dat 'n mens moet baie versigtig wees om die Bybel op 'n moralistiese wyse te lees. Want as die Here nou hierdie woorde wat vertaal word hier met wetteloosheid gebruik, dan het daar net sekere goed wat in ons koppe opkom. Maar die goed wat in ons eie harte skuil, die subtiele goed, die dinge wat ek nie altyd so by die naam kan noem nie. Dis deel van hierdie wetteloosheid. Die wetteloosheid, as een mens Jesus se woorde neem, wat hy sê, wanneer hy sê, waaroor gaan die wet en die profete, dan sê hy, om God lief te hê en my naaste lief te hê, soos myself. So wetteloosheid is om juist nie God te lief te hê, dat hy die belangrikste in jou lewe is. En om jou naaste, wat daar uitvloei, jou naaste lief te hê nie. Dis waaroor het gaan hê, het gaan oor verhouding. En dit is wat ons moet eerder na kyk en dit verstaan. Met die wysheid wat die Gees gee, as wat ons het sê, ja, hier is dit nou mooi, dis nou daai ouens wat die Here nou hiervan praat, daai wettelose ouens. Nee, dit is deel van die verleiding van die bose, dat ons het so makkelijk parkeer in daai hokkie, sekere goed, en dan sien ons nie die ander goed raak nie. So ons moet baie mooi kyk, die wye poort en die breë pad wat die meeste mense kies. Want dit is maklik, maar lei tot die verderf. Ons sal dit beter moet verstaan. Wat beteken dat dit maklik is en die meeste mense kies dit? En dan is daar die nou poort en die smal pad wat na die lewe lei. Wat beteken dit? Want hierdie twee moontlikhede word teenoor mekaar gestel. Die een is wyd en is maklik en baie gaan daarop en hulle lei na die vernietiging, die verderf. Die ander ene is 'n nou pad, is moeilik, hy saamgepers. Min vind dit, want jy kan maklik afgly van hom af. En lewe. Liewe luisteraars, die Here praat nie, maar net hier soos ook in die res van die bergrede, wat hy doen in die res van die bergrede, om uiterlike godsdienstige dade te noem nie. Nee. Maar hy praat van dit wat binne in jou en my aangaan. Dit wat in my hart is. Ons het groot geword met hierdie verstaan van die nou weg. Dit wat jy uiterlik doen. Maar die hele bergrede gaan in hierdie dele baie beslis. Nie net oor my dade nie, maar nog meer as die dade oor my hart, waaruit my dade kom. Dit is die belangrike. Dit gaan nie oor die geregtigheid van die fariseërs nie. Die uiterlike dade wat mense op jou tanden kners en vastbyt en doen, ja, jy doen dit, jy moet dit doen, want so word jy geken. Jesus het in hierdie sin gepraat oor dinge soos seks, hy het oor huwelik gepraat, hy het oor moord gepraat, ontrouheid in die huwelik, en om kwaad te praat vir andere, maar hy het dit altyd terug na die hart gebring. Wat is in jou hart? Wat dink jy daar? Wat begeer jy? Wat vrees jy? Wat dryf jou? Hoe gaan jy in die koninkryk? In die ewige lewe? Hoe gaan jy in? Wat is hierdie nou pad? Jou geregtigheid wat jy van Jesus ontvang het, sy regte lewe, vol gehoorsaam aan God, met ander woorde, om die Vader, om God lief te hê bo alles, by naaste, doch niemand kon ooit nog dit doen, volmaak, volledig, soos Jesus nie. En hy kom en hy sê, ek gee dit vir jou, wat jy in geloof kan ontvang, dit verander jou hart, en dan is dit meer, dis binne in jou, dis meer as die uiterlike van die fariseërs. Daarom is die vraag so belangrik vir elkeen van ons. Wie en wat, wie of wat is die koning van jou hart? Jo, wat 'n vraag om te vraag. Want ons kan het baie makkelijk antwoord. Maar ons moet baie mooi dankie oor. Want baie dinge lyk reg en ek, maar dan is dit enige iets wat die plek van God neem in jou hart. Met ander woorde, wat belangriker word. En dit is al waaroor jy dink en dit is wat jy doen. Dit is nie God nie. Dis iets anderste. So, wie is koning van jou hart? Is die Here koning van jou hart? En hier wys hy nou in hierdie verse op iets wat baie sensitief is vir baie mense. En vooral in die Christenwêreld vandag. Hoe weet ek iemand is van die Here? Wie is valse profete? Pas op vir hulle, sê Jesus. Maar hoe sal ons weet? Ek gesels onlangs met iemand wat ek dink wonderlike werk in die koninkryk doen. Maar die persoon vaar uit in die godsdienstigheid in die kerke. En net die volgende oomblik, dan sê hy, maar hy hoor in die woord, dat dit moet gaan vir ons om eenheid en nederigheid. Dit is wat ons moet hee. En dan net in die volgende sin, praat hy neerhalend van 'n christelike instelling. Ek dink nie, as hy besef, dit is wat hier gebeur het, toe hy gepraat het nie. Hoe sal een mens kan onderskei? Wat gebeur hier in iemand se hart? In die eerste plek het Jesus ons geleer. Ons moet vir wysheid vra. Soek, klop, vra. En jylle sal ontvang. Soek, vra, soek, klop, om te kan onderskei, wat is in my hart, wat is in iemand anders se hart, eerder as om net op die uiterlike te gaan staat maak. Hoe sal dit oopgemaak word vir ons? Want sien, ek kan nou self hierdie persoon kritiseer. Nee, kyk nou net hierdie persoon, hy praat in een oomblik, praat hy van die skynheiligheid en die godsdienstigheid in die kerke en dan praat hy neerhalend van 'n ander organisasie self. Terwyl hy sê ons moet eintlik een wees en nederig wees. Ek kan homself kritiseer en oordeel met die balk in my eie oog. Jesus sê ons het wysheid nodig. Daardie wysheid kom nie met oulike skills en dinge wat mense ons leer nie, dit kom van bo. Jakobus 3 sê dit helder en duidelik. Ons moet juist nie sommer net iemand van buitenkant af, wat hy doen en sê veroordeel nie. Maar dit kan 'n wolf in skaapsklere, ek sê die skaapsklere, maar is eintlik 'n wolf daar binne. En dan sê die Here ook, nie almal wat sê, Here, Here, is van my nie. So miskien moet ons, ek ook, almal van ons, baie versigtig wees, wanneer ons ander kritiseer en veroordeel. Maak jy seker, dit ons self, ek moet self ook eers, want ek het gestoei met hierdie persoon se woorde. Maar ek moet self eers by die Here kom, in die Gees wees. Een met die Gees, sodat ek nie dit wat ek hoor en sien, neem, en dan oordeel daaroor vel vanuit my eie denke nie. Om deel van die Gees te wees, gee die Here vir my die gawe, die vrug van die Gees. Sy wysheid. Geduld, vriendelikheid, liefde. En nie maar net om uiterlik te oordeel. As ek uiterlik oordeel met die balk in my eie oog, dan kan ek maar weet, in my eie hart is daar iets wat nie reg is nie. In my eie hart het iets anders belangriker as die Here gekom. so dat ons uit die gees lewe. En ons kan net leef. Ons kan net werklik leef as ons ontvang die lewe van Jesus. Dis al. Ek kan met die beste tricks en vaardighede, kommunikasievaardighede en wat ook al, kan ek probeer om dinge reg te doen. Maar het gaan aan wat gebeur in my hart. Want wie het Jesus die sterkste al gespreek? Die skyn heilig is. Kom ons gesels verder hieroor na die musiek. Bly ingeskakel. Jy is steeds ingeskakel by die program Krag van die Bybel. En ons het nou net voor die musiek gesê, kom ons praat bietjie meer oor hierdie skynheiligheid waarvan die Here so dikwels praat in die bergrede. Hy sê dit so baie keer, vooral wanneer hy praat met die fariseers, die skrifgeleerdes, maar selfs ook met sy disippels. En so die vroeg-christelike gemeentes, toe hulle hierdie evangelie op die perkamentrolle gehoor het, gelees het, hulle het verstaan. Hulle het dit gehoor. En so al lyk ons wêreld anders vandag. Is dit vir ons ook belangrik om te verstaan wat die Here hier bedoel met skynheiligheid. Hipokriete. Wat is dit? Want skynheiligheid beteken jy gee iets voor wat jy nie is nie. Jy, buitenkant lyk het goed, skaapskleere, dis mooi vrugte, dis wonderwerke, maak mense gesond en dryf duivels uit. Maar binne is nie hart, is dit anders, daar is iets anders te daar. Die hart, die denke, begeertes, die motivering. En die feit dat die Here so klemtoon met hierdie drie beelde eintlik, die valse profete, die wolwe en skaapskleere, dan die bome en die vrugte, en dan die wat sê, Here, Here, maar binne is hulle iets anderste. Dit is so belangrik, dat ons verstaan dat hy beklemde toon dit hier aan die einde van die bergrede. Hy sê dit hier op 'n ander manier, maar het gaan baie duidelik hier oor die hart, jou eie hart, en die hart van ander. Maar het is so moeilik. Het is so moeilik beteken om te weet wat in jou eie hart omgaan. Hierdie manne wie ek verwys het, ek is seker hy het nie mooi besef wat besig is om te gebeur hier nie. As hy iemand veroordeel, of 'n organisasie veroordeel, maar hy doen dieselfde, net daar. Ek dink nie hy is so bewus daarvan nie. Jeremia sê, immers die hart is bedrieglik, en net God ken dit. Hoe sal ons weet, of dit 'n wolf is daar binne, of daar die optrede woorde, hoe goed dit ook al buitenkant lyk, selfs wonderwerke en genesings, maar binne in die hart is dit sleg. Sien, hierdie woorde van Jesus is vir ons so moeilik. Omdat ons uiteindelik leer, almal van ons, meeste van ons, kom ons sê dit liefste dan so, dat mens kyk na die uiterlike, ons noem dit moralisties, jy, solank jy net die regte dinge doen en sê, en dan ook, volgens wat ons self net dink wat reg is, net soos die fariseers. Hulle het ook gedink, maar hulle weet wat reg is. En dan veroordeel ons ander wat nie so optree soos wat ons dink nie. Wat reg is nie. Daarom het Jesus in hierdie hoofstuk gepraat voor hierdie gedeelte om nie ander te oordeel nie. Al die balk uit jou eie oog, so dat jy splinter in ander se oog kan uithaal. Jesus sê wat in jou hart is. As jy die lewe het van God, die geregtigheid van Jesus, deur sy gees, dan sal dit uitkom in jou lewe. Okay, ons verstaan dit. Dit wat in jou hart is, kom uit na buiten. Jou hart is altyd nee, denke, jou begeertes, dit wat vir jou belangrik is. In jou hart, dit bepaal hoe jy optree en hoe jy praat. Okay, dit is redelijk duidelik vir ons. Maar dan maak hy dit vir ons moeiliker. Want dit klink asof hy sê, een doringboom dra nie vye nie, en een slegte boom kan nie gesonde vrugte dra nie. Of wat binnen is, kom na buiten. As het binnen sleg is, kom dit uit na buiten. Maar hoe moet ek dan verstaan, dat as jy binnen een wolf is, kan jy nog buitenkant maak asof jy een skaap is? Kan jylle hoor, dit maak het baie moeiliker, maar dit is moontlik. Dit is wat Jesus vir ons wil wys. Jy kan binnenkant jou hart op daai oomblik sleg wees. Daar is kind van die Here. Is dit toch dat ons so maklik kan skuif, sonder so subtiel kan skuif, en dat iets anderste ons hart beheer. Dit is erg, maar is moontlik. Hoe sal ek het weet? Want ek weet dan wat in my hart is en wat na buitenkant toe kom. Al lyk dit of dit skaapklere is, of dit mooi is en goed is. Ek weet wat gaan aan in my hart. Kan ons dit verstaan? Ja, ons kan. As ons Jesus' woorde oor skynheiligheid onthou, sal ons verstaan, dit is moontlik om binne dat iets anderste as die Here jou beheer op daai oomblik. Ek sê op daai oomblik, want ons kan altyd terugdraai na hom. En dat hy wat in ons woon dan nie bedroef word nie, maar dat hy deur ons lewe en aan ons, dat die lewende water uit ons kan vloei. Ons kan dit verstaan, dat ons binnenkant op daai oomblik sleg is, en na buiten nagemaakte, nie echte, goeie vrugte, wat lyk soos goeie vrugte kan dra. Kom ek verduidelik dit so. Hier buiten my tuin is een appelboom. En elke jaar wanneer dit die tyd is dat hierdie appels baie mooi ryp is en ons dit kan pluk, en dan voor ek my kom kry, as een warm dag kry, so tussenin, dan is die appels vrot. Hulle was mooi, goed, maar is vrot. Dan sê Susan vir my, nee, jong, jy moet iets doen in hierdie appelboom. Ek sê, ja, dit is makkelijk. Dan vat ek my skaar, snoei skaar, en snoei ek al hierdie vrot appels in die boom. En hier om die draai is 'n vrugtewinkel. Dan gekoop ek hierdie mooi, rooi appels. En dan kom ek terug, en dan vat ek my, wat noem jy dit, 'n staple gun, 'n kramiekie drukker. En ek kram al hierdie appels daar waar die vrot is nou afgehaal is. Dan roep ek haar, sê, kyk hier so, wat het ek gedoen? Kyk hier mooi, appels dra hierdie boom. Nou, jylle sal nou lach as jylle nou hierdie storiekie van my hoor, maar dis wat gebeur met ons. Dis waarvan die Here praat ook hier. Dit lyk mooi na buitenkant, maar binnenkant is dit vrot. Want daar is iets in die boom wat nie lekker is nie, in sy wortelsysteem. En dit kan ook my verwar. En ek weet, dit is baie moeilik om dit te besef, maar dit is moontlik dat ek goeie appels wys, maar aan die kant is dit sleg. Dit waarna Jesus verwys hier. Maar in werklikheid wat Jesus sê, as die hart reg is, as die boom, 'n vrye boom is, sy saad, dis die Here se saad, dis sy gees in my, dan sal my vrugte eg wees. Kom ons hou daaraan vas. Ons luister na musiek en dan gesels ons weer hieroor verder. Bly ingeskakel. Jy is ingeskakel by die ABBA-program Krag van die Woord. Hoe sal ons dan, en dit is waaroor ons gesels oor hierdie voorbeelde wat Jesus nou vir ons gee van die wolf en skaapsklere en die vrye boom wat nie dorings kan dra nie en die wat sê Here, Here, en dan al hierdie wonderwerke gedoen, maar Here sê ek ken jou nie. Hoe is dit moontlik? Hoe sal ons die hart ken? Hoe sal ons nog beter ons eie gedagtes, ons begeertes en ons vrese leer ken? Nou, dit is ook waaroor Abu Ghan om mense op te lei om dit beter te verstaan. Maar hier waar ons hierdie uit die woord, want hierdie kom uit die woord, dit is so belangrik dat ons die twee groot gebooie wat Jesus in die bergrede noem, sal onthou om God lief te hê en my naaste lief te hê soos ek self. Dit is nie moontlik wanneer ek God lief het, en hy my Here is en ek sy gees ontvang het, en sy gees woon in my, dat ek nie my naaste lief het nie. En toch gebeur het, jy weet het en ek weet het. Daaruit beteken is dat ek baie geïrriteerd is met mense en wat hulle sê en doen. Selfs al is dit eintlik nie so erg nie. Dit kan wees dat ek as kind van die Here in 'n oomblik iets anders te toelaat om te belangrik te word in my hart. Paulus sê dit in Romeine 8 en Romeine 7. Ek wil die goeie, dan lê die kwaad in my nabij. En in 1 Johannes lees ons letterlik, die Here sê dit eksplisiet, dat jy kan nie sê jy het God lief en nie jou naaste lief hê nie. So as daar in enige gegewe oomblik iets anders is wat belangriker in my hart is, soos om in daai oomblik aanvaar te word deur ander, om goed te lyk in ander se oë, erkenning te kry, om geld te kry, om vrede te hê, of om in beheer te wees, enige iets kan in 'n gegewe oomblik in my hart die belangrikste word, al is ek God se kind. Maar in daardie oomblik heers iets anderste as God in my hart. Dan is dit sleg in my hart. En dan kom dit uit in my vrugte of my dorings. Al lyk dit wat ek doen en sê goed, maar dit wat in my hart is, bepaal of dit goed is. Of dit van die Here kom, of dit uit my ou sondige natuur kom. Al lyk dit nou iets goeds, kan dit uit 'n slegte hart kom, 'n wolwe hart. Slegte boomwortels. Dit is wat die woord leer. En daarom ook is dit so belangrik, dat ons net vir 'n oomblik ook net kyk na Hebreërs 4 van vers 12. Hoe sal ons die hart ken? Net deur die woord en die gees. Die woord, sê die skrywer in die Hebreërs, is soos 'n tweesnydende swaard insny tussen murg en been, om die bedoelings en die begeertes van die hart te openbaar. Dis vir ons staan. So ons kan nie hart leer ken. Juist wanneer ons sy woord oopmaak en lees en luister en mediteer en vra dat hy deur sy gees vir ons wysheid sal gee om dit te verstaan. En dan wat doen ons, wanneer ons agterkom, wat ek nou net hier gesê het, kom uit 'n wolwe hart, 'n doringboom hart. Dan, my liewe luisteraar, dan draai ons na 'n ander slegte boom, 'n boom wat vervloek is, 'n kruisboom. Nou, Paulus noem die kruis 'n boom. Die boom wat Jesus op hom geneem het. Die boom waaraan hy gesterf het. Sodat hy deur sy gees aan ons nuwe harte kan gee. So wanneer jy agterkom dat dit wat jy nou gesê en doen het, al het dit mooi gelyk of sleg, draai na hom. Hy wat goed is, wat dit wat sleg is op hom geneem het, sodat ons die lewe van hom kan ontvang. So hoeveel keer kan ek na hom toe gaan, wanneer ek agterkom, hierdie was nie uit die regte hart nie? Oneindig keer, sonder eind, maar ga na hom. Wanneer hy dan in my woon deur sy gees, dan verander hy my hart. En dan word my vrugte eg. Skaap binne en skaap buite. Een vye boom binnen en een vye boom buiten. Een hart waarin die gees woon. Wonderwerke, genesing, woorde wat jou maak, kom uit my. En weet jy, dieselfde ook met ander mense. Ons kan die Here wysheid vra om te verstaan wat gaan aan in 'n ander se hart. Soos hierdie persoon waarna ek verwys het, ek hoef nie te veroordeel nie. Ek is ook nie beter nie. Want ek ken myself. En ek weet ek leef net uit die genade wat die Here my gee. En wanneer ek verstaan, dan het ek, omdat ek eers hierdie balk met my vingers, my hande uit my oog gekry het, is my vingers seer, hulle sensitief. En dan met hierdie sensitiewe vingers help ek om die splinterkie in 'n ander se oog uit te haal. Nie as iemand wat beter is nie, maar as iemand wat begenadig is in die Here. En hiervoor het ons wysheid nodig. En sê Paulus in Filippense 1 vers 9 tot 11 sê hy, ek bid juist dat julle liefde al meer sal toeneem in kennis en insig om die dinge wat saak maak te kan onderskei. Sodat julle met die oog op die dag van Christus innerlik suiwer en onberispelik kan wees, gevul met die vrug van geregtigheid deur Jesus Christus tot verheerliking en lof van God. Here, dankie vir u woord. Dankie vir die wysheid wat u vir ons gee deur u gees. En dankie dat ons by u hierdie volledige lewe het. Leer ons tog, Here, om dit te lewe uit die gees wat in ons is, met wie ons een geword het, dit is wie ek is, uit te lewe deur dit wat ek doen en dit wat ek sê, sodat ons u beeld kan wees in hierdie wêreld en u wil hier kan geskied in ons lewe, soos wat dit by u is. Dankie Here. Dankie vir die genade en die liefde en die goedheid in Jesus ons Here. Amen. Het was heerlik om met jou saam rondom die woord van die Here te sit en te hoor die woorde van die lewe. Mag die Here jou seën in hierdie week wat kom en ons kuier volgende week weer saam. Tot ziens.
Hierdie inset was aan jou gebring met die komplimente van Radio Kaapse Kansel 729 AM. Besoek ons gerus by www.capepulpit.co.za.